Welcome back to the Villain Edit. I am Monty Ashley.
And I'm Ryan Saul.
We talk about reality shows. For example, hey, how about that reality show we saw this week?
That was amazing. It's so real.
I have to look at my notes. It was called RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, RuPaul's Drag Race? What's that about?
Well, men supposedly dress as ladies, but really they dress as insane people.
That's crazy!
Yeah, it is.
Alright, so what happened on RuPaul's Drag Race this week?
Well, you know how every week they've had a very special moment where everyone is very serious and talks about eating disorders or the horrible things that have been going on in Russia?
Yes.
This week, the very serious moment was, let's talk about club kids and how important they were to the development of drag.
Eee!
Now, I noticed you were very excited that Lee Bowery got mentioned.
Lee Bowery is a very important person.
Explain why.
Back in the old days, in England, when they were starting the punk and new romantic movements, Lee Bowery created fashions that were just insane. They weren't either male or female. They were just like crazy inflatable suits and stuff. Things that really pushed the boundaries of fashion and gender. And I feel that he was really groundbreaking. He was an artist. Just basically the first person to dress that crazily. And I feel like that inspired and ushered in the club kids movement, which also came from the new romantic and movement, which came from the punk movement, which is where goth came from. But he was one of the progenitors of the club kids.
And, for example, I believe Boy George was like the wave right after Lee Bowery. People trying to look as cool as Lee Bowery, basically.
They were kind of contemporaries, but Lee Bowery was crazier.
All right. Now, did you like the runway looks we had this week? Because they were told to dress like club kids. Sasha, for example, dressed like a clown, which I thought was amazing.
I loved Sasha's runway look. It was very James St. James in a way that I felt like it was something James St. James would have probably worn and may have worn. I really liked it, and I thought it was crazy, and it was nice to see someone doing a clown that was not trying to do a scary clown.
Oh, so sick of that. Face off. Sasha was paired with Shay for the challenge, which was to make a TV show pilot. They did Teats and Askey.
With Teats McGee and Natasha Askey, international spies.
We saw their bulletin board. They had a little board full of notes that they brought into the shooting session. It was full of, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. Here is our list of scenes. One of the scenes was just called shoulder pads.
They were very organized. They knew what they were going to do coming in. They knew they were going to need special effects shots, and they knew what those were. I really liked it, and I thought that their show was funny. It was the only one that made me laugh.
Yeah.
And it was also incredibly fashion-forward.
Yes.
Which I also enjoyed. They put thought into what they were wearing.
Now, getting to Shay's runway look, her plan was to put basically a big sock on her face
and then hot glue things to it.
That's a weird order of events.
It is. You should put the sock on the wig head, glue things to it, and then put it on your face. Because as a person with a great many hot glue scars, I can tell you, do not hot glue things to your face.
I have heard, and maybe you can verify this, that hot glue is hot.
Oh, hot glue is so hot. Ow.
So she basically hot glued things to her own face.
Yes. And it was a look I've actually seen on fashion runways. I can't remember the name of the designer or the show, but I've seen the look before. And it works.
Yeah. And Shay and Sasha won, and I was very happy.
It was very club kid via runway, and they won, and they absolutely should have. Although, oh my God, I can't imagine hot gluing things to my face. It still makes me wince just thinking about it.
The Untucked every week starts with the people who have won or are safe hanging out in the lounge. So this was just Shay and Sasha dressed ridiculously, sitting on a couch, having a conversation. Because they're not allowed to de-costume.
Right, and because Shay, the way the hot glue was working, she couldn't take the sock all the way off her head. She just kind of had to pull it up over her mouth so she could talk and get her drink in. And they tried later on this, later they were having serious conversations. It just does not work.
Yeah.
I know they were having serious conversations about who was going home, but they looked so ridiculous that I just laughed with delight the entire time.
Now, the second group was Valentina and Nina.
Tina and Nina.
That's the extent of their plan is, well, our names rhyme if we shorten yours to Tina, so let's just do that. They had the same...
They're like, what are we going to do? Let's improv it. They actually said the words, let's improv it. These are not people who are known for their improving skills.
They also had a bulletin board. It was covered in blank pieces of paper.
Conceptual.
And they just flailed around and got into a food fight, which I personally found pretty funny. Like, they committed to their lack of idea.
Yeah, after a while, they were just rubbing food on each other, which... I don't know. Not my thing.
It reminds me of this horrifying show I went to once in a bar.
Oh, dear God.
The thing I remember most about it was, it's a bar, so we're all standing about 2 feet from the performer who was in a waiting pool pouring milk over herself.
It was supposed to be sexy.
It wasn't supposed to be sexy. It was supposed to be meaningful.
I'm glad I wasn't there.
It was neither.
All right, I agree.
And it stuck with me. And that's what this reminded me of. Somebody was like, well, food, you don't normally take food and rub it on your face. So by doing that, I'm doing something.
We got a special note at work that says, and I quote, if that guy calls again looking for films of men over 18 getting food rubbed on their faces, please tell him we cannot help him. And I'm so sad because now he's going to call back and he will have missed Drag Race.
Have you sent him to the Public Enemy? Or does he only want men with foods rubbed in their
only
face?
Only men.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Nina had a really cool face paint, which she's very good at for her club kid look. It was
She glued on some emergency quickly made prosthetics and she did this crazy skull thing. It wasn't attractive at all. But it was really scary. It was nightmare fodder, and it worked.
And it was very animated. Like, every expression she made was highlighted.
Yeah.
Which I think was really
cool. The paint job was great, but the outfit was just...
She painted a couple of things on her torso and said, out of time, let's go.
Painted some things on her torso. She wore a pair of fishnets with neon pink... knee-high fishnets with neon pink fringe on them and a little skirt that had neon pink, a lace skirt with neon pink fringe that was like a mid-thigh length. And it was...
All right. I want to say this about Nina. In the last few episodes, Nina has been kind of had a storyline where she's becoming paranoid and thinks everybody's out to get her and everybody's against her.
She keeps saying things like that.
Which I don't think is happening. But also, one of the things she thinks people are saying about her is that she's not original. Nina Bonina Brown. Everybody thinks you're incredibly original. You might not be doing...
What they consider normal. You're not doing what they consider drag in some cases. But no one thinks you are not original, girl.
You are very creative. You're very original. Let's hold on to that.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem to me like people really are talking about her behind her back. And if they are, she's blowing it out of proportion because she has low self-esteem.
Yeah.
I've been there. I know that. I know that train. I've been on it.
The show's getting to her. The show's also getting to Alexis, but we'll get to her.
Yeah.
Valentina's club kid look was a cool matador outfit with a veil covering the bottom half of her face.
Yeah, pretty much. And the veil was covered with sequins, so it was supposed to, I guess, look like a bloody mouth, maybe. Mm. But it was basically the same matador outfit Cynthia Lee Fontaine wore when she went home, which might have been a warning.
The curse of the matador. I believe that's a Hardy Boys story.
Yeah, probably.
The third group was three people. Trinity, Peppermint, and Alexis.
They had an idea for a show.
Yeah.
It was going to be about two church ladies, a white church lady, a black church lady, and they're going to a nun for counseling to deal with their gay sons.
I wasn't into it.
Nothing of that came across in their performance.
Like, they clearly had more of an idea than Nina and Valentina, but it wasn't funny like Shay and Sasha.
It wasn't funny, and they didn't script anything. They just kind of went out there and talked over each other, all three of them yelling at the same time.
I hate when people yell at the same time.
Well, then I won't say anything. Enjoy your podcast.
All right, this is now the Monty Show. they had a big to-do about who was going to do their voiceover, because Alexis really wanted to do the voiceover.
Yeah.
And it's weird, because both of the other two teams, both people did parts of the voiceover.
But in this one, Peppermint wanted to do the voiceover. She's like, this is my show, I do voiceovers, I'm going to do the voiceover.
And
it was the only part of the show that didn't have three people yelling at once, so more power to her, really.
That was where Alexis started to, I think, get in her head. I don't know. It seemed like it was a much bigger deal to them than to anybody else.
Yeah.
So Alexis's look was white face with a big black horizontal line across her eyes and nose.
Right. I believe we've seen that in Gerard Way in My Chemical Romance has done that look.
Mm-hmm.
Then Michael
Stipe was rocking that look for several years.
I'm sure.
He had a blue stripe, but it was pretty much the same thing.
And she didn't bring the white face all the way down. It just came down to her neck and then kind of brushed out across her chest. She was wearing a body stocking, which showed more of her body than normal.
Yeah.
It's in shape. And she was very nervous about that because she has body issues.
But
I didn't like the look. And the only thing I could find in a Club Kid thing was that it looked like a look Matthew Anderson had done, except his body stocking was all hand-painted. And apparently Matthew and Rue have recently had a feud, so maybe that's not what you want to look like.
Peppermint's look was one of the purest Club Kid looks.
Hers was great.
Her silhouette was kind of Bibendum the Michelin Man, except with giant shoulder things, and it was all red and white stripes.
Yeah, it was giant. She had giant peppermint candies on her shoulders.
And her head. She was all painted pepperminty.
Yeah.
It was very peppermint.
It was very peppermint. I liked it a lot. I thought that it reminded me of a look I had seen before on a guy named Muffinhead, who you should look up. He's amazing. But when I went back and looked at the pictures of him, it was not the same outfit. So,
all right.
So good for her for being pepperminty and reasonably original.
And Trinity was very colorful and had a bunch of random stuff glued to her, as I remember.
Also, Peppermint gets extra points for saying that her look is a cross between Lee Bowery and Klaus Nomi. It did have a large black plastic inflatable necktie, which reminded me of Klaus Nomi.
Well, then I'm going to give Trinity points for saying her look was alien robotic venereal disease realness.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
So Sasha and Shay were immediately told they both won, and they went off to the lounge. Then there was talk of who the bottom were, even though Valentina and Nina were clearly the worst two.
Yeah, sorry, girls.
And Trinity, Peppermint, Alexis was worst of that group, but nobody except maybe Alexis thought that she did as bad.
Oh, but Alexis tried to take credit for all the funny and clever lines in their sketch, which had no funny or clever lines in it.
Yeah, when the judges said, Alexis, we felt like you didn't pop as much as the other two, by which they mean she did not shout her lines directly down the barrel of the camera. Alexis's defense was, well, I was spending a lot of time on the production side and writing the lines. And at that point, Peppermint stepped up and said, no, we all did equal work behind the scenes. She did not write the script. She was not the producer.
Yeah, they should have let her have the credit for writing the script and the producer, because she would have gotten a lot of trouble for that if she actually had done it.
So in Untucked, everybody could tell it's probably somewhere between Valentina, Nina, and Alexis. Nina, I thought, made a really good point that if it were fair, Valentina and Nina would be lip-syncing, but she thought most likely it would be one of them against Alexis, which I think is a really nice way to tell Alexis you might lip-sync without telling Alexis, I think you did the worst.
Yeah.
But in fact, what happened was Nina and Valentina were chosen to lip-sync.
Yes.
And then, oh no,
Then what happened was the following. This was heartbreaking to watch. First off, Valentina refused to take off her facial mask that she had worn for her club kid look.
So, not just... First, they start lip-syncing, and she's got it on. And the judges and audience are saying, is she going to leave that on?
And then Rue stopped the music and asked her to take it off, and she said, no.
I would prefer to leave it on. I'd like to keep it on, please. And then Rue said, it's a lip-sync. What part of that do you not understand?
Yeah, she was getting in trouble, and she was obviously frozen like a deer in the headlights.
So, Valentina sadly took her face thing off, and they started the lip sync again, and Valentina didn't know the words at all.
Yeah, she kind of stood there in the corner trying to lip sync without moving, something a friend of mine calls the old park and bark. And she then tried to hold up her arm so that her matador cape covered her face. Kind of like in Plan 9 from Outer Space when they bring in the chiropractor to fill in for Lugosi.
And it was just heartbreaking.
It was. You could see the horror and fear and shame in her eyes. It was one of the hardest things I've had to watch recently.
Although I will say, she should feel shame. True. Come on.
Because we noticed during the Untucked, she wasn't listening to the song or practicing at all.
Yeah, Alexis thought, well, I've got like a 40% chance to go. I'm going to go practice my song. Nina stayed on the couch, earphones in, practicing, doing the lip movements, deciding what choreography she's going to do.
Eventually, Valentina took one of the earphones and listened to the song a little bit.
But by the end of Untucked, she was practically in a fetal position. She was, like, covering up her butt. Oh, it was...
It was really hard to watch.
She was not emotionally prepared.
Well, I feel like only having so little experience as a drag queen that she lacks the confidence to fake it well.
Well, we say that, but on the other hand, Charlie Hides, who has all the experience in the world, was the other person who just completely bailed on the lip sync.
I mean, yeah, we've had some bad lip syncs this season.
Yeah, I have not liked the lip syncs. I will say, Nina was going to win no matter what with what she was going up against. Did not take her foot off the gas. She had a bunch of moves.
Nope, she went full on the whole time. It wasn't like she's like slowed down because Valentina is obviously over there dying quietly in the corner. She just went full on with the lip sync. She has got to stop ending up in the bottom.
Yeah.
Like, or she's got to go home.
I'm convinced Nina's going to go home pretty soon, but although she's in a bad place emotionally, I feel like, and this is just complete, you know, based on what we're shown on the television show, I don't know the actual person, but her character on the television show has been in a bad place, but she's not giving up. She's like, all right, I'm going to go slay whoever I'm put in front of, and I respect that a lot.
Yeah. I agree. I'm sorry to see Valentina go. She seemed really nice. But I feel like given 5 more years, she could come back and slay it.
Yeah.
But we'll save that for an all-star season sometime in the distant future. What else did we watch this week, Monty?
Well, we've been watching Amazing Race. We're just going to do a quick hit on that.
Okay.
This is the season where strangers have been paired up, so there were not pre-existing dynamics.
Right.
But one of the standout teams for me has been Team Fun, who look like little weedy kids.
They were the team that when they first started, I was like, man, those are the two most obnoxious people. I'm so glad they ended up together so I don't have to watch them on separate teams. And then they completely won my heart.
And in fact, they've been one of the two strongest teams this season. Them and the huge masculine team.
And their entire ethos is that we are on this show to have fun.
But to have fun while competing. Not like that surfer guy who was here to have fun and refused to run.
Yeah, like, that guy's...
But these two were like, oh, a rock climbing challenge. Oh, this girl who looks like a nerd.
She's made out of sticks.
Teaches rock climbing. So she just went straight up it. They had fun all the time.
Yeah, they were a pleasure to watch racing. Because even when the other teams were all screaming and looking at maps, Team Fun had one moment of weakness where they were both really down. But even so, they supported each other. And even in this episode where they were tragically eliminated.
Yeah.
That was the toughest challenge. Oh my God, this poor guy. He had to take this bicycle and put hundreds of crab pots on it and then ride. And then one of the crab pots fell off and he had to do it again and again.
And he never, even at the beginning, he didn't have the leg strength to keep his bicycle going. So he had to pretty much walk the bicycle.
Yeah.
And after he'd done it three times, he basically collapsed from heat stroke and Phil had to come tell them, "You're out of the race."
Yeah. And he fought so hard to stay in the race. And I felt bad about it because they've been one of the top teams and I was really kind of hoping they would win. But, you know, I'm glad they got to have fun.
Now I'm pretty sure the team that's two giant dudes, one of whom is missing a foot, is going to win.
Yeah, Team One Foot's gonna hop across the finish line.
There's also an awful team, Brooke and Scott, where Brooke is just awful.
Oh, she's the worst. She just screams at Scott all the time. Scott's this gay guy who's trying to be nice and positive, and Brooke is just a screaming bitch.
And
she hates everything he does.
And he keeps doing these challenges he's terrified of.
Yeah, he's really afraid of heights, and she manages to get him to do all the height challenges, and yeah, they're awful.
And she keeps screaming that everything is his fault, and
I would like her to go home.
I'm assuming she's watching the show going, "Oh, no."
Yeah, I would hope so. I hope she's self-aware enough for that.
All right. Let's do The Pitch. That's our new signature segment.
Oh, crap. The Pitch. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where, based on what happened to us last week, we pitched reality shows.
All right.
Not a lot happened to us. It turns out, here's a little peek behind the scenes, I guess I assumed we were going to do something on the level of go to Disneyland every week.
I'm up for that.
So,
well, we did not go to Disneyland this week.
One thing that happened last week was World Goth Day.
It's true.
What do you got?
Well, I was thinking of a challenge that would be good for World Goth Day. Each person is given a black t-shirt, a pair of jeans. They're then given $10 and sent into a dollar store, and whoever comes out with the most complete gothic look is the winner.
I like it.
Yeah, I really want to do it. I'm kind of thinking of just going to the dollar store today and seeing if I can pull that off, because it sounds like a fun challenge.
I'd like to propose, don't tell me what not to wear. Here's how it works. Two busybodies come to your house and go through your closet and are really judgmental. Then you tell them to shut up. You get to dress them up in your closet stuff and send them on their way.
Oh my God, that's the best. And they have to, and like the camera has to follow them for a day as they live life in your clothing.
Yes. It's for people who don't dress like everyone else and are sick of being told by busybodies that they should.
Yeah.
The other thing that happened this week is your scooter won't start. But I
was trying to figure out how to make a game out of it. All I got was each person gets their scooter out of storage and tries to get it running in the 15 minutes they have before the Seattle weather changes and it starts to rain.
I felt like it was kind of Amazing Race-ish already.
Yeah.
Or this exact thing happened on Top Gear when they went to Vietnam.
Kind of, yeah.
Your scooter doesn't work.
Yeah, but then they were able to fix it in 15 minutes
because... Because they had...
They were in a culture where everyone has a scooter.
Yeah.
And they also are a television show.
Yeah, they actually had to change the rules on them mid-challenge because it turns out it's real easy to fix a scooter in Vietnam. There's a million scooters and everybody can just, you need that carburetor taken out. Pop, pop, there you go.
Yeah. So, let's see, what else have we got here?
Would you like to talk about The Bachelorette?
Let's talk about Forged in Fire first, because The Bachelorette's going to take a while.
Forged in Fire.
A lot to unpack.
Forged in Fire had three people who had been forging for 5 or 6 years, and one guy who'd been forging for 8 months.
Yeah. And...
His name is Neil. He's a Hawaiian. He learned from watching Jay Nielsen's videos.
Right. So it was great that Jay Nielsen was there as a judge this week.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I get to meet my hero and show him what I've learned from him, which I thought was cool. An interesting...
Like, he probably would have been happy to see other guy, whose name I can't remember. Cool. Looks like he's in Metallica.
Jason Knight.
Sounds like he's a vampire killer.
Yeah.
But it was cool that he got to see Jay Nielsen. They were given mining tools plus some 1085 steel.
Right.
Everybody...
Well, everybody took the pickaxe because it's already pointy. Yeah, so you got an advantage
there. There's a big, wide, flat thing, and the judges said, yeah, that was the right thing to take.
Yep.
So a lot of times in these challenges, there will be a clearly correct answer and then some stuff that's a trick. Nobody fell for the trick. Three of them said, I'm just going to use the mining tool.
Right.
It's wide, it's flat, it's basically metal already. I don't trust my forge welds. Demetrios, who used to be a chef, said, I'm going to forge weld. So he did kind of a taco thing with the 1085 steel in the middle.
Right, because you want the harder steel in the middle? Or
you want the harder steel in the middle sticking out, so that's where the edge is.
Right.
And then the spine is the softer
steel.
So
it's a little more bendy, yes.
No
one else was confident in their forge welds. And it turns out Demetrius shouldn't have been very confident in his forge welds either, because it did not go well.
Yeah, his blade ended up so thin that he quenched it and it warped, and he had to reheat treat it and requench it 8 times, I think.
Yeah, it was a record. 8 times. I didn't even know that could happen.
And he went home. That left Storm, who was young and energetic, Dan, who is a guy... Sorry. And Neil, who is the Hawaiian.
He's only been forging for 8 months.
At the second round, Storm went home.
Yeah, his blade...
Everyone's blade did okay, but his got all chipped up.
Yeah.
But they still sliced right through the ratchet straps.
Yeah, but the coconut challenge didn't go well for Storm, so he went out.
So then they were told to make a chinchada.
This is Dan... Who's left? Dan and Neil?
Dan and Neil.
Dan's the guy. He likes to do stuff. Neil's the Hawaiian. He's only been forging for 8 months.
A chinchada.
The chimichanga.
It's pronounced Misty of Chincoteague.
Oh, the Misty of Chincoteague is an Italian-style sword. You've probably seen some Roman guys using them in movies. It's basically a big triangle.
Yeah.
It's like five. It's like supposed to be 5 fingers wide at the top, and then it comes down to a point. It's... looks like it would be super heavy and unpleasant to wield.
People wielding this one mostly commented on how it was heavy and annoying. We were told that it's featured in Assassin's Creed. I don't recall it in Assassin's Creed, and I've played all those games. You do get a lot of weapons there, so I assume one of the ones you unlock and don't care about.
Yep. Anyway, because it's such a big heavy sword, it has to have fullers in it, which are those things that I always call blood channels.
Yep.
Because I'm romantic.
You had to have multiple fullers, so they had to figure out a way to put in grooves. Now, the forging process for these swords was not interesting to me. Both of them got a big flat piece of metal, basically...
cut a triangle into it and beat it flat.
Like, it was already basically the right shape. Once they finished cutting it, then they heated it up, hammered it a bit, stuck in fullers, probably by, one of them just took a
drill and kind of drilled it out.
And one of them took what was basically a Dremel tool and just...
Yeah.
That was Neil. He says he doesn't measure anything. He just goes by feel, man.
Dude, you gotta measure. That's how I sew, and you see... you don't see how I'm dressed, but... you could tell I never measure when I sew. Let's just say that.
So the challenges, when they both came back to the place, one, ice block test, where Keith Baker takes the sword and wangs into an ice block several times, see if it deforms the blade.
I like the ice block test much better than I like some of the other tests. I've complained in the past about the test being ridiculously tough. An ice block is something you might hit with a sword at some point. Some of the things...
antlers are extremely hard. Being shot with a bullet is just dumb.
I agree. We need better gun control in this country.
Then they did the ratchet strap test, and both swords went right through it. And then it was Doug Marcaita's turn to chop up some pigs.
And the swords went right through them?
Yep. You learned something about what happens to the pigs.
Oh, yeah. I've been curious about this, because they're always chopping up pigs and cows and lambs and whatever they can find. Apparently, the food is all donated afterwards. The meat is all donated afterwards to a processor and then given to food banks or something.
So that's good news.
That's good news. They're not being forced to have a giant barbecue every week.
Oh, no.
That's the worst.
So both swords did really well. And in the end, Neil won because his handle was a little prettier.
Yes. And everyone was shocked because he's been forging for such a short time. And I was so happy for him because his parts, the stuff, the metal he was using, he just kind of went out and grabbed it from a junkyard and has his little home forge that he built himself. And I liked his spirit.
Yeah. So that was a cool episode. I did not like the sword, but I did like the competitors a lot. Before we get to The Bachelorette, what's the deal with this crossover between Naked and Afraid and Naked and Afraid XL? Wouldn't that just make it like Naked and Afraid L?
It might have. So what happened was, okay, they're filming Naked and Afraid XL in the Amazon jungle. And they're simultaneously a few miles away from filming just a regular Naked and Afraid two-person survival show. Well, the people on XL were being injured and sent home at such a rate, with the flesh-eating viruses and the broken knees, and God only knows what else, and the guy that cut his foot with the machete. They've lost so many people on that show that when they had the people that were there for the 21-day show for Naked and Afraid, they told them that their evacuation route went right past the camp for the people on Naked and Afraid XL, so they could stop and spend the night with those guys. And then if they wanted to stay on for an additional 20 days, they could join the XL show.
The clever part is not asking them until after they've stayed the night.
So they have time to make connections and realize what other human beings are like.
When you're slogging your way out of the jungle, and if someone just pops up and says, hey, you want to stay an extra couple of weeks in this cave? You say no. But if you've stayed in the cave,
and you haven't had any human companionship for 21 days, and suddenly there's people to talk to, and they have food, it makes you much more likely to stay. So one of the people stayed, the man stayed, the woman that had done her 21-day challenge did not stay, but the guy that was with her accompanied her the rest of the way to the extraction point to make sure she got out safe.
That's good.
Yeah. That was a really good Naked and Afraid, but now the poor guy that stayed with the Naked and Afraid XL team has pretty much had it with those guys. Oh my God, they're arguing, they're fussing. There's a guy who thinks he's in charge, and he's clearly that henchman. It's like there was a guy that was kind of in charge, and he was super macho, and then he had this sniveling little weaselly henchman, and when super macho went home, henchman believed it was his place to step up into the role of leadership, but he's not. He just gets mad when anyone tries to do anything else to help the team, because he feels it's his job and responsibility.
Super Macho would be a good name for a Mexican wrestler.
El Super Macho!
All right. Thank you for the update.
Thanks. You're welcome.
Let's talk briefly about The Bachelorette.
I'm not sure we can talk briefly about it. I'm afraid it's going to take a while to unpack all of the crap and nonsense.
All right. So, It's weird. Watching last season, which is our first season of The Bachelor, we kept thinking, this is so demeaning to these poor women, the way they have to run around and, like, beg for the attention of this man. But now Rachel, who I liked on The Bachelor, now she is The Bachelorette. And I keep thinking, this is so demeaning for Rachel.
Yeah, I felt the same way. And the guys are just awful.
There are probably some not awful guys. But the show is not interested in them yet. I think you made this point. It's like the rounds of So You Think You Can Dance auditions that are mostly idiots who can't dance.
Yeah.
Like, this is the William Hung round.
Yeah.
Where you get a guy interviewing saying, I am a sports nutritionist and personal trainer. I work out intensely. And then his subtitle comes up and he's described as aspiring drummer.
I thought that was pretty funny.
The production team does not like this dude, who then went
I don't
on,
like that dude either. He likes to talk about his... He was talking about his penis a lot.
A lot.
Like, more than normal. He might want to see a doctor.
Yeah.
Just saying. A couple of the contestants are lawyers.
Yeah.
With one of them with tragic backstories.
So I feel like this was the episode where people come out of the limo, try to impress her, and then hang out in a room with other guys getting drunk for 12 hours and while waiting for their chance to have another 5-minute conversation with her. So they have a choice between, hi, I can't wait to get you to know you better, or doing an Urkel impression.
Oh, my God.
And that's a tough choice, because if you don't do an Urkel impression, she'll never remember you. But if you do an Urkel impression,
she'll never forget you, and she'll be trying as hard as she can.
Even if it's the best Urkel impression.
It wasn't.
And it was weird that when one limo pulled up, they were catcalling her.
Yeah, like, they're hey, like, you. Hey, baby. I'm like, no, catcalling is not the way to someone's heart. There was a lot of drinking because you could tell it was an all-night shoot. And so some of the contestants would get drunker and drunker, which was sort of amusing. There's a guy on there who gives his profession as Tickle Monster.
And, yeah, his introduction was, all right, hold out your hands in a bowl, close your eyes, and then he tickles her and says, I just wanted to make sure one person made you smile. Dude, do not tickle people.
No. First of all, no. Second of all, no.
The thing I just kept saying during this whole episode was, oh no, oh no. Like, a guy named Adam brought a little doll he called Adam Jr.
It was not a little doll. It was like a child-sized mannequin with his own face drawn on it.
It was very off-putting. He never got to do anything with it because everybody said, no, put that down. But I did enjoy that later on there was a segment where they pretended Adam Jr. was doing an interview and somebody was doing a French voiceover and they're doing kind of a moody shot of it. Whatever person on the Bachelorette team proposed that and had to convince everybody else this was a good idea.
And it was. It was possibly the best part of the show.
You were right and you are the hero because I'm sure people did not like that idea at first.
Right. Let's see. They brought in the girls that she was with on The Bachelor to consult with her.
Yeah.
For no reason.
They seemed nice. They all were rooting for her. I will say Corinne seemed normal and everybody liked her. Although, you saw that article floating around saying, my family's slave?
Yeah, that was pretty much Corinne's situation.
Right?
You know, when she's like, I'm 26 and I still have my nanny. No, that lady is some kind of slave. And it was very uncomfortable for me watching at the time. And I'm still uncomfortable about it, but yeah, whatever. Oh, we haven't talked about, let's see what we got here.
We're running out.
We haven't talked about Waboom yet.
All right, so this is Lucas. Lucas's thing is that he would very, very much like to be on television. He's got a dumb catchphrase that he has on his t-shirt. Everyone else is in suits or a penguin costume. And he shouts his catchphrase several times and appears to think that will mean he will be a star.
Yes, and he shouts it a lot, and it's really awful. His catchphrase is Waboom.
It's Waboom.
Please stop that.
Okay, imagine that about 12 times as loud and 20 times as long.
And with a guy smirking as though he thinks it's the most brilliant thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, this is his catchphrase, and he is so damn proud of it.
He's probably pumping his fist, too.
And then there's the other guy, the sex coach slash aspiring drummer.
Yeah, that's Blake.
And Blake is like, he is on this show for all the wrong reasons. And I'm like, there is no right reason to be on this show.
He's on this show for the same reason you are, Blake. He wants to be on television. But here's the exciting twist. It was revealed that both Blake and Lucas were on a Wii TV show called Exile. That's right. E-X space I-S-L-E.
That's a show where people are sent to islands to get counsel with their exes to get relationship counseling and see if they can get over their ex and move on with their lives.
Exile is a groundbreaking new series where five on-again, off-again couples endure intensive therapy, it says, in order to break free of their toxic relationships forever. Wait, so they're trying to break up? That's the goal of this show, is to break people up?
Yes.
I love this.
Carmen Electra will guide them on a multi-step process for getting over their ex.
That reminds me of a reality show I've been pitching for years, Divorced by America. Three couples come on, and you get to call in a number to say which of you people can't ever see each other again.
But then they bring in 10 eligible singles to give all the exes a fresh chance at love.
And others a dose of heartache. And I've not watched this show, but it's here on WeTV.com, so I'm going to watch some of it.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to download some episodes yesterday, but I couldn't get them to work.
Anyway, apparently Lucas and Blake were both on this show.
And they have a feud.
Yeah, so this is an imported feud. I also found some of Lucas's stand-up act.
Oh my god, he has a stand-up act?
No, he doesn't. He did some stand-up, unwisely let it be videoed, put it up on YouTube, and left it there.
Oh my god, he is the worst.
Well, what's weird is I also watched his intro video for Exile. Not very much wa-booming.
Oh no,
this is a new catchphrase.
Yeah, this is a new thing he's trying, a new way to brand himself. I personally would like to brand him.
The thing is, Lucas, all of America hates you. Everybody.
Lucas, you are...
This is the wrong...
Maybe not in real life, but in your television persona, you are the worst.
No.
You are the worst.
I'm not backing off of this one. He clearly chose this television persona. This was his plan. This is how he wanted it to go.
I know. I'm just trying to be nice.
So...
He's the worst. If he jumped out in front of my car, I wouldn't swerve.
The, rose ceremony took place in broad daylight.
Yes, because they had been filming all night, and it was pretty obvious they had been filming and drinking all night.
And everybody has to keep all of their nice clothes on. So,
yes.
Which is a shame, because there were a lot of guys in bow ties, and a couple of the bow ties were real ties, which
but
I
most
appreciate.
Were clip-ons.
Yeah, most were clip-ons. Nice clip-ons, but guys, they're clip-ons. And the reason you have a real bow tie is so that when the evening gets late, you can untie it and let it drape over your neck and you look like you're in the Rat Pack.
Right.
But no one got to do
that. But no one got to do that because they all had to keep looking nice, even though some of them were looking pretty stubbly by the rose ceremony. Also, by the time of the rose ceremony, pretty drunk. They were all grabbing the... What's the rose you get that means you get to the immunity
the
rose?
The first impression rose.
The immunity rose. And they were all arguing over who was going to get it. He's like, I don't even need to try. It was just gross.
Oh,
it was such gross frat boy banter.
There was a lot of, you making time with my woman? She's my woman. I own her already.
Yeah, somebody actually said that. And that is no good.
He might have been the one who got sent home who was very angry because he had so many nice suits he wanted to wear.
It could be. There was a guy who was angry about his suits not being featured.
Honestly, a lot of guys had nice suits.
They did. There were some nice suits on there.
It was a well-dressed crowd. There were some nice guys. There was one guy, I don't know how you were able to pick him out among everyone else, who you were insisted was Ted Bundy-like.
Oh, yeah. There's one of the lawyers, and he's just got this terrifying Invisalign smile. And his teeth are way too white for the rest of his face. And he's kind of greasy. It's definitely Ted Bundy. The guy's got a Ted Bundy vibe. There's a guy I like who's a pro wrestler who has a little girl. I like him a lot, but I don't think he's going to win because I don't think that the Bachelorette, is ready to jump into having a family with kids already. But I liked him. He seemed like an honest, nice guy.
He was the subject of some controversy this week where they fill out biographies for the website. And they get posted, and then apparently people take parts of them down after they've been read.
Oh!
So in this case, the part of his biography that got redacted after the public saw it, the question was something like, what's the craziest sex thing you've ever done? And his answer was, I had sex with a woman while her husband watched.
Was it the wife of Bubba the Love Sponge?
He didn't say.
I bet it was.
Wow. Well, on that shockingly timely note, we are going to go get on with our lives and watch more television.
And try to fix our scooters.
Happy Goth Day, everybody.
Happy belated Goth Day.